Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Tony Smith and Ryan O'Halloran.
Yeah, at some point, Ryan O will be here. He's down at the stadium getting that interview. I almost forgot. What's the name of the other guy who usually does this show with me?
Tom Dempsey?
No. Feel like I'm almost forgetting.
That's how I feel about him, meh.
It's kind of like it's been so long that I'm almost forgetting, but Mike Dempsey will rejoin us on Thursday.
Where in the world is Mike Dempsey today?
I have not checked on Twitter today.
No picture from Twitter?
I have not checked. That doesn't mean he hasn't sent one out. I just haven't looked today, so let me go to his timeline real quick and take a look to see if he's put anything up this morning, letting us know where he is. But yeah, he's been all over the place. He tweeted out 11 hours ago about Mount Rushmore. So, okay. So yesterday he was around Mount Rushmore.
Is that a signal that he wants us to do an entire show about our Mount Rushmores?
No. He can.
Nobody wants that.
If he wants to ask that question when he gets back on Thursday, that's fine. Our fan feedback question of the day today is less than a Mount Rushmore. We're only going to ask for three names today, and I got this question from one of our listeners, Brandon, on Twitter, at YoungBR2002, and I asked him if I could use it. I was like, hey, man, I'm going to use that. It was a really good question. I was like, I'm going to use that with your permission, of course. And he said, yeah, do your thing, man. So the question today that we're asking you Jaguars fans is, who will be the top three defensive players for the Jaguars as of this time next year? So you have to look forward in time an entire offseason and determine who you think the top three defensive players on this roster will be going into the 2018 season. So you can send in your answers on that at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. Ryan O'Halloran will be in later. You can go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. Send in your answers there if you would like. Again, just who do you think the three best defensive players are going to be? It's a very defensive show today. Here on Jaguars Today, going to get into that AFC South Q&A. Does improve defense make the Jaguars division contenders? I got all my own stats that I went through this weekend trying to put it together to take a look at what it looks like for the Jaguars to improve by just 6 points a game, and how often are we really seeing that happen? Now, I only went back to 2010 in the NFL when trying to compile my stats, so there's a lot of time, but I only have so much time on a weekend to go back and look at this stuff. So I went back to 2010 and took a look at how many teams have improved by 6 points or more on defense from one season to the next and exactly what that looked like for those teams. We'll discuss that. We're going to let you hear those comments of Jalen Ramsey as he was talking at the Tallahassee Takeover, and he's a little bit upset about still being asked questions about the injury because he feels like he is just fine and dandy and ready to go for training camp. Also going to let you hear the interview with James Coleman, T-Wig, as they sat down with Rashad Green and Telvin Smith up at the Tallahassee Takeover as well. Want to make sure that you hear from those guys. It's always fun to get more than one of those guys together and kind of let them play off each other as much as anything. And Coleman being a Florida State grad, T-Wig obviously a big Florida State fan, it's kind of cool that they're the ones that had the opportunity to sit down with those guys. So we'll let you hear that here in about 30 minutes as well, here on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. They are North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers, semi-automatic pistols, rifles, shotguns, and tactical rifles. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. There, you can trade your gold for guns. Just go to Guns4Jacks. That's Guns4Jacks.com. Or you can give them a call at 904-693-0777. We got a bunch to get into today. Going to get into this Jaguars defense. What do those improved numbers look like as we get things rolling here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday? Fat Tony here with you. Ryan O'Halloran will be joining me here in just a few moments as he'll be back down from the stadium, and we'll get his reaction to what Mark Lamping had to say, as well as figure out who the heck he was talking to today. Heck, it could have been Mark Lamping, for all I know. We'll find out when he finally gets here in studio. We'll get into the Jaguars' defense. Just what does it look like to improve by that touchdown a game for the Jags? We'll dig into that next as we get things rolling here on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field.
This is the quarterback here at Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to the Jaguars Today on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
There he is, Blake Bortles, your quarterback. Already one of the top handful of quarterbacks in the league, according to his colleagues. There, if you buy into the NFL Top 100 Players list, that's Wednesday nights, right? Is that Wednesday nights? Are they down to like the top 10 or something?
It just did the 20s, I believe, last week.
So we got two more weeks of this? Man, they know how to stretch a program out over the offseason, don't they? Holy cow.
They got to create content. It's June. These are dire months. There's not a whole lot of content out there, Tony.
I'm aware. I'm doing a Jaguars and NFL show here for 2 hours a day. I'm aware. Now, I'm not the NFL Network, where I actually have, you know, access to basically anything I want constantly. If I had access to NFL films and sound, it'd be pretty incredible.
I feel like if you work at the NFL Network and you're a talent booker there, you call any agent or player and say, hey, I'm at NFL HQ. I'd like to get you on the show tonight.
I need five minutes.
You'd have no problem.
Yeah, I need but 5 minutes of your guys saying nothing.
Us small-time guys here in little Jacksonville, Florida on Jaguars Today, we got to struggle. We grind here on the show.
From time to time, we grind. Time to time, we grind. Yesterday, I was grinding. I was like, okay, I need to come up with something that we can do on the show on Monday. We've been talking Jaguars defense all offseason. What does it actually look like for this team to improve by, say, a touchdown a game? So I said 6 points. I didn't even put it at seven. I just put it at 6 points a game. Being the improvement marker for this team. And I'm going to go through the stats on what that looks like here in the NFL since 2010 here in just a moment. It is ironic. It really is. It's ironic that it happened to be on the day that on ESPN.com, on the ESPN Nation stuff, the AFC South writers, Mike DiRocco, Tanya Ganguly, Paul Kaharski, and Mike Wells, who cover the Colts, Titans, Texans, and obviously the Jags with Mike DiRocco, they do one question a day. They've been doing this for the last couple of weeks where it's an AFC South question. And someone who covers one of the teams asks a team-specific question about themselves. And the other three writers from the division answer the question, right? So the question today was, does improved defense make Jaguars division contenders? All right. Does improved defense make the Jaguars division contenders? The answers, Tanya Ganguly from Houston basically said they'll be better, especially in the second half of the year whenever all these pieces start clicking together a little bit. But the interesting part of her answer, with the Texans having improved offensively, okay, and the Colts getting quarterback Andrew Luck healthy again, it will take more than defensive improvement to truly make a run for the division. She went on to point out that the Jags were bottom half of the league in QBR, overall yards per game, rushing yards per game, sacks allowed per attempt, third down efficiency, and red zone efficiency, which you can't argue with stats. Stats are what stats are. That's at least how Tanya feels about it. So apparently she doesn't think the improved defense is going to be the reason the Jags contend for a division. It's a bunch of things in her mind that have to come together for this team, which is fair.
How much really did Houston improve on offense? We don't know what Brock Osweiler is. We have no idea.
And I've said it the entire offseason, if you're looking at the units in this division, the Houston defense is the thing that you feel most solid about.
That's their identity.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And everything else, I think the Jaguars offense could be number two on that list, right? If you're splitting it into offense and defense for all four teams. So of those eight units on either side of the ball, the Jaguars offense may be able to be number two on that list, but I feel pretty strongly that the Houston defense is going to be number one on that list. Paul Kaharski, who covers the Tennessee Titans, said yes to that question. Does it make them a division contender? Yes. He said he doesn't think he'll be picking the Jags to win the division, but does believe that all four teams has gotten better. Thinks that it certainly should shoot that Jags defense up this year, just the influx of talent. Mike Wells, who covers the Indianapolis Colts, we all know how the people who are covering the Colts feel about that Colts defense, right? I mean, we know.
Solid.
Not even that.
They're dog poop.
Dog poop is the reference that we got when talking about the Colts defense. But Mike Wells, who covers the Colts for ESPN Nation, said yes. And let me say it again, yes, with three exclamation points. He says the Jags continue to add pieces so the defense can keep up with the offense. There's a certain NFL team in Indianapolis that should do the same thing. So We know how he feels about not only where the Jags may be going on defense, but exactly where the Colts are right now on that side of the ball as well. So you got two yeses, one no, basically an answer to that question. So my question going into my research was, just how much does a touchdown a game affect a team? We saw how vastly different this Jaguars team felt last year, improving by a touchdown a game on offense, essentially, and shooting up. Now, are they things where they still need to be better? Obviously, on that side of the ball. The offensive line was still an issue, as Blake Bortles still got sacked 50-plus times. That number has to come way down. The running game was still an issue. They need to be a lot more efficient on that side of the ball and be able to control football games, which is not something they were able to really do it during most games last year. At times they did, but never really consistently able to do that. Maybe the second half of Indianapolis, they controlled that football game last year during that blowout. But other than that, no. The offense was never really in cruise control, just keeping the other team off the field and eliminating opportunities. So they have some maturing that they still need to do. But on the other side of the ball, we've been talking about it all offseason long. 31st in points in 2015 given up. And in the end, that's the stat that matters to me. Football is still a game about scoring points and stopping the guy in front of you from scoring points. Now, you can look at whatever sabermetric units you want, you know, rush yards, all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that they're unimportant.
You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
Thank you. Thank you, Trent Dilfer. And look, that's kind of my point here. It's about how many points you score versus how many points you give up. The Jaguars defense last year gave up 28 points per game. 28 points per game, which was 31st in the NFL. So if they improve last year, if you just cut off 6 points a game from that Jaguars team, so a touchdown a game, that puts them at 22 per game, obviously, which would have them 15th in the NFL. That would put them 15th in the NFL. As far as how that affects playoff standings, all that kind of stuff, I'll get into that here in just a moment. But 6 points a game would put them at 22 per game, which would put them at 15th in the National Football League. Now, what does it look like when a team improves by 6 points a game on defense? I went through since 2010 and looked at all the teams across the NFL and how many of those teams had improved by 6 points from one season to the next on the defensive side of the football. There have been 11 teams that have done it. All right, so 11 teams in six seasons. All right, 11 in six seasons. So you're talking about one or two a year. Most years, I think 11 and 12 was kind of there was 11 and 12, and then 12 and 13 both had three teams each year that got it done, and then 13 and 14 had three teams that got it done, and nobody last year. There were a couple teams from 2010 to 2011 that made that transition. Interestingly enough, there were a couple teams that appeared on this list twice, which tells you, I think, all you need to know about those particular franchises. I think it was Houston appeared on the list twice, and maybe it was Minnesota, I think, appeared on the list twice. I think both those teams improved by 6 points a game two times in the last six seasons, which tells you how up and down those franchises have been. And if you look at where they've been in the standings, it plays out that way. But since 2010, 11 teams in the National Football League have improved by 6 points from one year to the next on the defensive side of the ball. What kind of improvement does that have on a football team? Now, I'm not saying it's the only factor. I didn't look at their offense for any of those 11 teams to see how much it improved. Just didn't look at the offensive side of the ball. So I didn't look at their points per game. I was only looking at defense and how much that improved. So there are other factors that obviously I didn't include in this. I did, however, keep track of what happened with their win-loss record, which is the most important statistic in football. I looked at how much they improved as far as getting after the opposing quarterback. So their sacks, how much that improved, how much their interception rate improved from one year to the next, how much their average turnovers forced improved from one year to the next, if it did. I kept track of how many of those 11 teams changed head coaches, of how many of those 11 teams changed defensive coordinator. I was looking at how many new starters there were from one year to the next for all those teams, because that's a big number here in Jacksonville, where we're talking five or six new faces of the 11 on that side of the ball. How many are these teams that are making that kind of jump actually replacing in their lineup, and how many rookies they're relying on? How many rookies are starting for these teams from one year to the next that are making this jump from kind of a low basement level defense to that middle level defense, and for some of them up to the top of the league. So I looked at all those. What I found was, it was staggering. Honestly, it staggered me how much of a difference 6 points made in the National Football League defensively. For starters, the team's average wins went up by 5 games a team with those 6 points. Now, again, I didn't look at offense. I didn't look at any other factors, but it went up by 5 games per team. So basically that's saying if the Jaguars can improve by that touchdown a game, that on average, with these other 11 teams that have done that since 2010, their record would be 10-6. That's what that number means, right? And again, that's not including any other factors, just the fact that they improved by 6 points a game, their win-loss record went up by 5. So that would make the Jaguars a 10-6 football team in 2016. Their average sack numbers went up by 8. All right, so that would put the Jags with 44 sacks, which last year would have put them tied for 6th with Arizona last year in the National Football League if they improved by 8 in the sack column. The interceptions went up by 5. So that would put the Jags with 15 interceptions. That would be tied for 10th in the National Football League last year. Their average turnovers forced increased by 7, which would put the Jags with 25 turnovers, tied for 12th in the National Football League. In other words, drastic improvement across the board. They would be top 10 to 12 statistically in every major defensive category in the league, except for points, because it would only put them to 15th. But that's a little bit shaky because last year the points were a little bit higher than they have been in years past. Now, as far as the changes beyond that, five of the 11 teams had changed head coaches. That doesn't include in that 5 Sean Payton, and the Saints were in that list. The Saints improved by 6 points on defense the year after Sean Payton returned from his suspension. So I didn't know exactly how to classify that one as far as a head coaching change or whatever, because he was there and then he wasn't because of the suspension with the bounty gate. But Sean Payton, I guess you could technically consider the 6th head coaching change in there, but 5 of the 11 teams changed head coaches. 10 of the 11 teams that improved by 6 points per game on defense changed defensive coordinators from 1 year to the next. 10 out of 11. And to give you an idea of some of the guys that they brought in as their defensive coordinators, Vic Fangio in San Francisco in 2011, Wade Phillips in Houston in 2011, Jack Del Rio in Denver in 2012, Andy Reid became the head coach in Kansas City. Kansas City went from 2-14 to 11-5 in one season. They also improved from 26 points to 19 points a game. And their turnovers, theirs was the most drastic. They went from 13 to 36 turnovers from 2012 to 2013. The Saints, as I mentioned, Rob Ryan came in as the defensive coordinator there. George Edwards in Minnesota, Romeo Crennel, again, Houston on this list twice, and Jim Schwartz in Buffalo are some of the new defensive coordinators. But 10 of the 11 teams had a defensive coordinator change. So certainly the Jaguars checked that box with Todd Wash coming in now as the defensive coordinator for this team. The 11 teams averaged 5 new starters on defense. So essentially they were changing on average half of their starting lineup on defense. Now some of it I'm sure was due to injury with some of these football teams, but 5. Okay, so the Jaguars are right around that number. That's not an outlier number for this Jaguars team. And as far as rookies that these teams were depending on, 11 total rookies in the starting lineups for these 11 teams. No team had more than 2. The Jaguars look like they're going to be relying heavily on 2. It depends on how you want to classify Dante Fowler Jr., but technically he's not a rookie. He is a second-year player, so you can look at him however you want. So the Jags hit a lot of these like check boxes as far as what these other teams did defensively. Now, obviously, there's a lot of teams that change defensive coordinators and don't improve by a touchdown a game. There's a lot of teams that change half their starting defensive lineup and don't improve by a touchdown a game. There's a lot of teams that have to rely on a couple of rookies and don't improve. That's certainly a reality in the National Football League, but it was interesting looking at the teams that have done it, that they've done it kind of the way the Jaguars are doing it. It's kind of been this kind of story is how that improvement has happened basically overnight in the National Football League. Now, as far as what the numbers mean, that's the again, it would make them a 10-6 football team, put them top 10 in sacks and interceptions, top 12 in turnovers. But as far as the impact that defense has on actually making the playoffs, which is what's important here in Jacksonville, Green Bay last year was 12th with 20.2 points per game given up. That's 7.8 points better than the Jags last year. Only three of the 11 teams that we've been talking about here actually improved by that per game. So to get the top 12. And why that number is important, since 2010, 53 of the 72 playoff teams were top 12 in defense. So basically, three quarters of the teams that are going to make the playoffs in the NFL are top 12. And 12 is important because that's how many teams make the playoffs in the NFL. But basically, 75% of the teams that make the playoffs are top 12 in defense. Last year, 11 of the top 12 teams on defense in points per game made the playoffs. The only exception to that was Washington, who came in at 17, and they were in a terrible division, a division only rivaled by the AFC South for how bad it really was last year in the NFL. But 53 out of 72 playoff teams since 2010 were top 12 in defense. That number slightly higher than it is on the offensive side of the ball. Offense, it was 51 out of 72. So there's not a big difference between the two, but it does look like defense is a slightly better indicator of whether or not a team's going to be able to make the playoffs when everything is said and done. I'd have to go back further than 2010 to get a more, I guess, realistic number as far as which of those is a better indicator. But 53 compared to 51 of the defensive teams to offensive teams in the top 12 made the playoffs. So defense is a major league indicator of whether or not a team is going to make the playoffs. I also look, just out of my own curiosity, since 2010, the 12th-ranked defense in the league has given up an average of 21.1 points per game. So for the Jags to get to that level, you're talking about having to improve by 6.9 points per game, essentially. So almost a full 7 points per game. And again, there weren't a whole lot of teams in that list that have been able to do that. We're also talking about teams, a lot of them, when they made that improvement, with the exception of Houston and Minnesota, once they made that improvement, it was for the long haul. And especially the teams that were relying on rookies seemed to have a more consistent line, like from there on out. It just looked that way. Again, this is only going back to 2010, but I did find it interesting that those numbers basically say Jags improved by 6 points, they should be in line to win 10 games. Hey, seems pretty nice. Jacksonville gives me a little bit of hope. It's a question of whether or not we think these guys, these pieces, can be put together to get that kind of result for this football team. Let's get out to the phone lines at 641-1010. The fan feedback question of the day today, asking you, Jaguars fans, who do you think the top three teams on this defense will be once we get to this time next offseason? Jarrell from the north side is called in. He wants to give his answer. What's going on today, Jarrell?
Oh, nothing much, man. When you posed the question, I ain't gonna lie, I was like, dang, that's hard. but my top three, I think that will be the top three defenders for next year. I think by this time, I'm going Tayshawn Gibson, safety, Telvin Smith at outside linebacker, and it was a hard choice for the third one, but I'm going with Fowler at the end over Miles Jack.
Okay, so he's going to be over Jack. So you thought Jack would be the fourth on that list? Look, I think it's nice that you have options with this Jaguars defense for this kind of question. It's not...
There's, what, probably 7-8 guys you can make a legitimate, you know,
yeah,
campaign for them making in the top three for next year.
Yeah, no doubt, which is why it's an interesting question to me, and I'm curious to see all the answers we're going to get from you guys a little bit later on in the program. But yeah, I put in that research. Again, if you need any of it repeated, I can tweet out some of that information, probably will over the course of the next hour or two. Again, I just thought it was interesting trying to look at historically, what does that mean for a team if they're going to improve by basically that touchdown on one side of the ball? What kind of impact does that have on the bottom line for a football team? And it was a lot more of an impact than I even thought it would be. And I'm not sure if offensively that has the same kind of impact, improving by 6 points. It certainly didn't for the Jags last year. The offense improving as much as it did, but the defense got worse from 2013 or 2014 to 2015. Next, I want to give you the opportunity to hear from all the Jaguars players that were over there in Tallahassee, the takeover going on this weekend, and that includes your first-round draft pick, Jalen Ramsey, who was not so happy about the line of questioning that he was getting, at least when he stepped up to the podium over there in Tallahassee. Also want to let you hear, T-Wig and James Coleman had the opportunity to sit down with Rashad Greene and Telvin Smith both at the same time. It's always fun when you can get more than one player at the same time, because they kind of bounce off each other a little bit. We'll let you hear from Rashad Green, Telvin Smith, Jalen Ramsey, all coming up next as we continue along. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
The defense is dog crap.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah! Let's improve with that touchdown 10-6, boys. I think 10-6 is probably going to be good enough to win the South. I got a feeling 10-6 probably gets the job done in the AFC South. And again, I'm not looking at any other factors except simply how many points do you allow on defense. That's the only thing I was taking into account. But it's drastic, the change that these teams made. And I can go through the list specifically, especially the teams that were around that kind of number the Jags were at last year, that 28-point threshold. And just what kind of improvement you saw from those teams, maybe to give you a better idea. Because some of the teams on that list included, like, San Francisco in 2010 to 2011. And that was when Harbaugh came in with San Francisco. That was a team that was allowing 21 points per game and basically went to 14 points per game when Harbaugh showed up. And that's when that run for San Francisco in the NFC West really started there for 4 years, basically, where they were competing head-to-head with Seattle. They went to a Super Bowl. You know, that's the kind of run that they went on when they were getting to those kind of numbers defensively. They also went from 6-10 to 13-3 in 1 year. Does that sound kind of fun? You know, how about 5-11 to 12-4? Does that sound like it might be a fun ride if you were here in Jacksonville? I think that would be unbelievable. Going to let you hear from T-Wig and James Coleman. They caught up with Rashad Green and Telvin Smith here in just a moment. But first, before we do that, the number 5 overall pick in the draft, Jalen Ramsey, who was a little bit upset at the end of minicamp that he didn't get to participate on that Wednesday and Thursday. He thought that he was physically well enough that he should be out there on the field. Todd Walsh, the defensive coordinator for the Jags, talked about it a little bit, that he had a burr in his saddle, I think it's the way that he described it. I wanted to get back out there on the field. Now, the team, understandably, being cautious with Ramsey, it looks like and sounds like he's definitely going to be back for the beginning of training camp for this Jaguars team. But Jalen Ramsey, up at the Tallahassee takeover this weekend, stepped up to the podium, and predictably, the first couple questions that were asked of him were about his injury status, and Jalen, to put it simply, just wasn't having any of it.
Just tell us just what the emotional rollercoaster was like for you this time with the injury after getting drafted.
What injury? Next question. How's your recovery coming, man? How soon do you see you think you'll be able to participate in camp in the fall?
I'm 100% next question. I'm going to just let all y'all know I won't answer no questions about my injury because I'm 100% healthy right now. I'm ready to go to training camp. So it doesn't really matter. It would be great if y'all ask me questions about being back in Tallahassee, being back in Florida State, where I chose to go to school, the best school in the country, being back with Telvin and Rashad. It would be great if y'all ask me those type of questions, but I'm not going to sit up here and talk to y'all about my injury because it's a non-factor now.
What's it like being back in Florida State?
No, it's great. I get excited to talk about Florida State. I get excited to talk about Jaguars.
There he is, Jalen Ramsey. I do love that question. Right on the heels of that. And you can see it in his face if you can go watch it online and see exactly the way that he's reacting to that first question where it's, all right, so how are you feeling? How are you recovering? He's like, I'm good. Next. And he's just kind of got this smirk on his face like, that should be the clue to all
again,
you guys.
And one more time.
Yeah. This should be like, I'm trying to tell you guys, I don't want to talk about this, right? I'm done talking about this. I'm fine. I'm ready. This is what we do, Jalen. Get used to it. Because it seems like the media may annoy you for a long time. If a question like in that kind of line of questioning is going to bother you, then it could be a very, very troublesome relationship. Because we're going to ask the question that we feel like needs to be asked from time to time. And if you're coming off an injury and you're the number 5 overall pick, the question that needs to be asked is, how are you feeling? And it seems like he is pretty adamant in his response of, I'm good. Jalen Ramsey feels like he's 100%, which is good news for Jaguars fans. It certainly does sound like he's going to be available at the beginning of training camp, which was a question when the injury happened.
Yeah, if you want to see the full video, Safeed Dean, he covers the Florida State Seminoles. You can find him on Twitter, as well as Big Cat Country. Both of those accounts have the... they're taking a fridge out of the station now? What's going on here?
I have no idea.
Got a sidetrack there. But anyways, yeah, if you want to find the full video of Jalen Ramsey in Tallahassee with the next question little bit there, it's on Safeed Dean or Big Cat Country's Twitter.
Yeah, check it out. It's funny. It's very funny watching Jalen react to all the media around him. Also, right here, want to give you the opportunity, a couple other former Seminoles that are now members of the Jacksonville Jaguars over there at the Tallahassee Takeover, Rashad Green, the wide receiver last year drafted by the team, Telvin Smith, now going into his third year here in Jacksonville. T-Wig and James Coleman, the former fullback for the Florida State Seminoles, had the opportunity to catch up with both those guys yesterday.
Right here with 1010XL, and we are joined by wide receiver Rashad Green, Noel, and Jaguars, and a dude that I call 50 every time I see him in the locker room, Telvin Smith. What's up, fellas?
Just cooling.
Got to be surreal for you guys. I know the NFL will make you forget about college, high school, and everything else because you're so in tune with trying to get that right. But it feels good to come back home a little bit, doesn't it?
See, look, I'm going to tell you this right here. If you ain't go to Florida State, you'll forget where you came from. Forget about Florida State, man. It's love. I'm telling you, man, it's love, man. But it's definitely great just being back around there by the support still coming out, showing love. You know, we did something special, and it's just showing.
Yeah, okay. Most definitely, man. Always great to come back here and just be a part of a great experience and just see what we've done here.
What we've done. He sound like Prince Hakeem, right? From Zamunda. Look at what I've done, man.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you the truth. You know, being an alum, I'm kind of jealous of them cats because they got the nice indoor practice facility, good stuff. They ain't have to do mat drills, none of that stuff. And they started winning, but just talk a little bit about, because when y'all came, it was a little downslope here at Florida State. So what was the focus, or how did y'all recreate that magic that was there during the dynasty era?
You go. He was here before me, so
that means you
respect
old.
Respect your elders.
Hey, listen. Hey, he just came in one behind me.
Yeah, one behind me.
We close. But nah, just understanding what Jimbo wanted to do when we got here, and as players, what we wanted. You know what I mean? We came in talking championships. He came from St. Thomas Aquinas. They nationally known for championships. I came out of Lions High, and that was our mindset. And we started getting all these players coming in, myself, Joyner, Jones. Everybody just started coming in on the same mindset, and I think that in itself, it just took over. And if you weren't with it, you got out of there.
You know what? That brings to a correlation that I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned Valdosta, and you mentioned St. Thomas. Y'all came to Florida State, and being from those big programs helped you. How much has being from Florida State and practicing every day here, doing those mat drills, and playing against and with so many other NFL players helped y'all translate over at Everbank?
I mean, pretty much it's taking what you know into a different environment, and the coaches understand where we came from, and they want guys like us, where we've came from a winning program since our career, so we don't know anything else but winning, so you have to pass that along. So when we lose or something like that, you know, we let the guys around us know that, man, that's not acceptable, and exactly. We need to do something to fix it and just change the whole environment around us. And a lot of guys now are buying in and understanding that we want to win, man.
So tell me about it like this, because I know when I played and when I go about and I see former Seminoles, like, my face light up. So especially the guys that I play with. So tell me, when you heard them call for the fifth pick, Jalen Ramsey, what was the first thing that came to your mind, both of y'all?
We're better than the defense. That's the first thing I said is we just got another one. I actually text Gus, and I said, oh, y'all made the right one right there. Just because I understand that, you know, we're going to battle together. I understand what's in him, and a lot of times with guys coming on the field, you don't truly know him, but that's one I can vouch for. So I said we're better than the defense around here.
We both been critical on the air, you know. 12 wins in 3 years,
yeah.
You can be critical.
Oh, yeah.
But I try to do it with respect because Derek's my boy. You know, I try to just be honest. Uh-huh. Now, this year, it looked different. You know why it looked different for me? Because when I look out now, whether it's y'all and Jalen, Malik, Tashawn, Dante, I don't want to mention the Gator where I'm standing at.
Yeah.
But he almost came here anyway, so right, I might as well mention it.
You know what I mean? He wanted to be a part of greatness.
That's right. But this is the phrase that I've used on the air, and he knows this. And tell me if it's accurate. I see dogs that bite. Not ones you have to wake up. Guys you have to take. No, come back.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what's changing when it comes around that defense. It's guys who know who they are, not trying to search about who they are. It's guys who know they are and going out there making plays and taking them chances. And that's what you need, you know what I mean, for a guy, especially on defense, when you want to talk about making plays and changing games. It's like you said, we got to tell them to hold up and get them off on them instead of go, go, go. And that's the difference. That's a different mentality.
All right. Enough of this defense, Tom. I don't care about that. I'm an offensive guy. Offense feels
defense.
So what I want to know is, what are we going to see from Rashad? Like, what's going to be that next step?
You know, I'm adding to the table, and I feel like I'm going to be a threat. You know, we need anything, I'm going to be able to get it. Just like I was here, I'm going to be reliable. And I'm going to definitely do my thing on a punt return.
Low key, though. $40 million gave you a little bit more reason to want to be a little more dominant, though.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I'm definitely chasing my dreams and want to reap the benefits of it. But, you know, I'm just trying to focus on making those plays right now, and it'll all come.
I promised them 5 minutes, so I'm going to let y'all go. But I need each one of y'all to do things. I just want you to do this, what I've built. Do that all over again for me.
What I've built.
Now, I want you to let me borrow that chain. I live in Bartra Park. You can come get it back tomorrow.
That's nice,
man. Hey, man, thanks for having us. Thanks for stopping by. You know, it's Jags, nose till I die. I didn't go here, but I've been rooting for them since I was 5 years old. Uh-huh. That's 42 years, man. So we appreciate y'all. Awesome. And 1010XL, love y'all to death.
Keep doing the things you're doing for the community, and make sure y'all keep coming back, visiting the boys. Just keep building that dynasty.
Most definitely.
All right.
Yeah, a lot of Noles talk there, but some Jaguars talk fit in there as well, as those guys talking about. And look, it's something that we've been saying for the last couple of years with the way that they've been building this team. They're bringing in a lot of guys who don't know what it feels like to be bad, who don't know what it feels like to lose, you know, and I think that's good. And hopefully that starts paying dividends for this team. And it's not just the guys they're drafting with guys like Ramsey and Jack and those level of guys, those level of programs that they're drafting out of, but it's the guys they're bringing in free agency too. It's bringing in Julius Thomas and Malik Jackson. Malik Jackson put a Super Bowl ring on his hand this offseason. I mean, that's the kind of level of success that he is accustomed to here in the National Football League, and I think that can only help a young locker room that's trying to figure out how to win. And really, that's one of the last hurdles that they have in their way right now, is figuring out how to consistently win in this league. They've been able to do it from time to time, but not with the level of consistency that they need to. Ryan O'Halloran should be joining me here in the next couple of minutes, I hope, as he had an interview down there at Everbank, and should be heading this way here in the next couple of minutes. But we got this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL, that's coming up next on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jacksonville Sharks, and Jacksonville University. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, we got a bunch of Jaguars-related birthdays that we'll get into here in just a moment. But first, one birthday not Jaguars-related. Bobby Wagner, 26 years old, a linebacker with the Seattle Seahawks, has made two Pro Bowls and an All-Pro team already in just his first 4 years in the National Football League. So happy birthday to Bobby Wagner. Now a bunch of Jaguars to pay attention to. Two of them former Jaguars, two of them current Jaguars. Brent Boyer, the linebacker, 45 years old, a sixth-round pick of the Miami Dolphins in 1994. Boyer joined the Jaguars in 95 and played with the team through the 2000 season, so he was here for that run from 96 to 99 here in Jacksonville. Jonas Gray, the running back, 26 years old, carried the ball 14 times for the Jaguars last season. Of course, he is in the middle of a fight to make the roster this year with the team. A lot of people wondering if he may be the third or fourth running back, depending on how many they want to carry, and if they're going to cut either Corey Grant or Denard Robinson when everything is said and done. But happy birthday to Jonas Gray, still 26 years young today. Scott Starks, the former third-round pick of the Jags in 2005 out of Wisconsin, the cornerback, 33 years old today. Started just one game here in 5 years, but it's a memorable start for Scott Starks. Of his two career interceptions, one of them came during his lone start in a Jaguars uniform. That was a 55-yard pick six against the Tennessee Titans. It was a 37-7 rout of Tennessee back in 2006. So happy birthday to Scott Starks. And finally, Julius Thomas, the Jaguars tight end, 28 years old, today, acquired in free agency last year, obviously, by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Caught 46 passes for 455 yards and 5 touchdowns, despite missing the first 4 games of the season last year due to injury. So hopefully a healthy 16 games for Julius Thomas. And that hookup continues to pay dividends for this Jacksonville Jaguars offense going into the future. 28 years old today, so be sure to wish him a happy birthday on social media today when you get the opportunity. Jonas Gray as well out there on social media with the Jags on the roster right now. And that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, Tony, Johnny Manziel's lawyer, he's in some big-time trouble, making a big mistake yesterday, accidentally texting the Associated Press that he had doubts that the Heisman Trophy-winning quarterback had an ability to stay clean, and also said that he was given a receipt that shows Manziel may have spent more than $1,000 at a drug paraphernalia store just 15 hours after he was involved in a hit-and-run crash. Defense attorney Bob Hinton's text indicated Manziel's legal team was seeking a plea deal with prosecutors. His text to the AP said, "Heaven help us if one of the conditions is to pee in a bottle."
Honestly, would someone help Johnny Manziel? I mean, I'm tired of hearing stories about Johnny Manziel to begin with, but none of the stories are positive. They're all stories like this, where it's just the guy getting in another piece of trouble. Nobody's telling him what the right thing to do is. I mean, it's a complete waste. I get upset every time I hear about this guy, because it should be better. Well, things should be better.
Well, over the weekend, his dad talked to ESPN's Josina Anderson, and I'm not sure if you saw this, but the dad said, "My son's a druggie. I hope he goes to jail. It would save his life." So it sounds like the family's tried everything they can. There's the guy's just not listening at all. Ugh. It's a sad story. We hope Johnny turns it around. You know, he's a talented player, but the dude's just off the rails right now.
Oh, yeah.
Spending $1,000 at a smoke shop, you're getting a lot of things there. you're not just buying, you know, a pack of cigarettes or one water pipe.
I wouldn't know. I've never been in a smoke shop.
You remember the Al Jazeera documentary on HGH from, what, December, right?
Yes.
Well, the NFL finally has plans to look into it. The league office will interview the Green Bay Packers linebackers Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews and Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker James Harrison on the first day of their respective training camps. The interview for former Packers linebacker and current free agent Mike Neal is scheduled to take place on or before July 22nd. Peyton was not included in the investigation because he is no longer a member of the NFL Players Union. Seattle's, this is probably my favorite story of the weekend, Tony. It's a little sad, obviously, a little disturbing. It involves Travaris Jackson. But the joke made at the end of the story is what makes it better. All right, so we'll start it over here.
Okay.
Former Seattle Seahawks quarterback Travaris Jackson was arrested early Friday morning on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon following an argument with a woman. According to the police report, the woman said she feared for her life when the quarterback allegedly pointed a loaded gun at her and threatened to kill her while he was intoxicated. The woman told police the quarterback arrived at their Kissimmee, Florida, home drunk and kicked in their bedroom door before getting into a verbal altercation with her. She said Jackson later took out a gun, loaded it, and pointed it right at her, stating, "I will kill you," according to the police report. And this is where it gets a little better here, Tony. Okay. Tavares stated that he never withdrew his firearm. He told police he never took his firearm out of his bag, but he did say that he would shoot her, to which his wife replied, "You better be accurate, because you damn sure ain't accurate on the field." So it looks like the backup gig behind Russell Wilson that Jackson's held for the last, what, 3 or so seasons is more than likely over.
Yeah. That story would be hilarious if it didn't include the kicking in a door and a loaded gun and the threats to kill you. The actual joke is really good.
The joke's funny. I mean, you have a gun in your face and you're just going to make fun of how inaccurate your husband is.
I mean, that's pretty funny. Everything else about it is pretty horrific.
Absolutely.
The details there.
Yeah, the wife says that Jackson has a history of getting a little violent and angry and aggressive when he drinks. Final story here in the Honda Drive Around the NFL. The Green Bay Packers are the only team in the league required to release their annual financial statements because they are the only team in the league publicly. They are a publicly held entity.
Yes.
The team released their details on Friday afternoon, and the big piece of information to come out of this is the national revenue. The Packers and all 31 other teams in the league get an even split of the national revenue, and the number this year is $222.6 million. The Packers report that is a 13.5 $1 million increase, a 6% increase over last year. And that's all I have for the Honda driver on the NFL.
Yeah, it's good to be an NFL owner. The money rolling in is not bad in the National Football League. And it's funny. I'm actually reading America's Game right now, which is a story about how pro football basically took hold of the American imagination. And you go back to reading about the early times with the National Football League, and it is a stark comparison to what it is now. I mean, you're talking about multiple teams failing every year. And we went through, when Brett Martineau was in here with me on Friday, we went through some of the teams that were around during that 1922 season, the first official season where it was called the National Football League. And there's three of those organizations that are still around. The Chicago Bears, they were the Chicago Cardinals at the time. They're now in Arizona, but it's the same organization. It's just moved around a bunch. And the Green Bay Packers, that's it. That's what's left of that group from 1922. Now, some of the other franchises might have moved around, and I don't know about it at this point in time. But it is the comparison between where football was and how it boomed into being what it is a fascinating story.
I mean, when it was the Chicago Cardinals, they were playing their games at Wrigley.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have their own stadium. They were playing their games at Wrigley or a public park down the street.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible just the way that the game has evolved. They up until basically the 40s, the like late 40s, they didn't want to move past Chicago, essentially. They didn't want to go west past Chicago because of travel expenses. They didn't want to go to the West Coast to do that. And I got pressured into those kinds of things because of owners that were losing money hand over fist, basically, to have an NFL franchise. There was a point in time where you could not make money playing football. There's just, as an organization, you could not make money putting on a professional football product. And to think that that was not that long ago. I mean, we're talking 60 years ago. 65, 70 years ago, where teams just could not financially make it viable. They did it just because they loved the game and believed that it could become something. And to think what it is now, where they're sharing hundreds of millions of dollars just in TV revenues alone between these franchises is pretty intense and crazy. Ryan O'Halloran will join me in the next couple of minutes. He's finally done down there at the stadium, so he's on his way back here to the station, so we'll get some details from him. We'll get his reaction maybe to some of those statistics that I threw out a moment ago. Mark Lamping also spoke late last week. Groundbreaking is going to happen at some point, at least an official ceremony for the groundbreaking there for the amphitheater and the outdoor practice facility. Just hasn't happened yet. So we'll get his reaction to all of that as we continue along. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. They are North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. You can trade your gold for guns. Guns, the number 4jacks.com, or give them a call at 904-693-0777. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Ryan O'Halloran joins me next here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field.
Hey, this is Russell Crowe, and you're listening to the best sports radio in the world, 1010XL Jacksonville Sports Radio.
1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Nowhere to hide when I'm getting you close.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I know you can't hear it because I'm not doing the right thing. I should have a headset for you here, Ryan, but he is playing JT.
Oh, good.
To welcome you into the studio right now.
I'm here for next 41 minutes.
Yeah, you got a busy day, man.
Yeah, I got ahead to fit a couple things in at the stadium. Going to go back there later, and then because I'm going out of town tomorrow for a week.
So where are we heading?
We are going to see my family in North Dakota for a couple days. And then we're going to hit down to Minneapolis for a couple of days before I come back. And then once I get back, we're here.
Yeah.
Camp will start.
It's getting close. I think I saw 11 more Sundays till the regular season gets started. It's crazy how fast the time goes when we actually get into, like, post-minicamp. It just flies.
Yeah. I don't like the countdowns, though, like 78, 79, because it's like that still feels like a long ways away, but – you know, do the camp stuff, because right now, you know, rookies are going to report July 25th.
Uh-huh.
And then the vets 2 days later. So, you know, once we get through the 4th of July, it'll really start getting in your sight.
So the Vets are in a month from today. That would be the 27th.
Yeah.
So 1 month from today, the Vets will be in camp. And a little less than 1 month from today, the Rookies will be in camp. And, yeah, I mean, it's interesting for a team. And, again, it's something I talked about early on in the program, Ryan. I know you were down there talking to some people at the stadium, so you didn't get to hear it. But I took it upon myself this weekend to go back. And I know last offseason you looked at the numbers for teams that had improved by, was it 6 points or seven points on offense? I don't remember how far back you went, but I looked at the numbers defensively in that kind of vein over the course of the weekend. I only went back to 2010, but I found 11 teams since 2010 that have improved by 6 points or more on defense, which last year would have put the Jags at 15th in the league with a six-point better team on that side of the ball. It was remarkable, the other numbers that surrounded that, as far as success markers for those 11 football teams. On average, their win totals went up by 5 between those teams. Now, again, I didn't look at offense. I didn't look at anything else except how much better they were on defense. So it's not a complete picture of what happened with these teams. But their win totals went up by 5. Their sack totals went up by 8. Their interception totals went up by 5. Their turnover totals, I think, went up by 7 when everything was said and done. On average, for those 11 teams who got just that six-point marker, there were a lot of teams that were close to that, like 5.5, that I didn't include. Mm-hmm. So who knows how much they would have skewed the numbers. But that's just since 2010, which if you look at those numbers and say the Jags do improve by that kind of margin, then on average, if you look at those 11 teams, that would make them a 10-6 football team with 44 sacks, which would have been good enough for 6th in the league this year, 15 interceptions, which would have been good enough for 10th in the league this year, and a forcing 25 turnovers, which would have been good enough for a tie for 12th. So it's a really significant type of number if they can actually hit that on the defensive side.
Yeah, I mean, the trend I started to look at was from 2000. How many teams in the bottom 5 and yard points allowed jumped into the top half? And there's a lot of them, but what you see is that defense in this league really is a roller coaster ride, because
no doubt.
Teams that are good are going to re-sign their offensive players. They're not going to re-sign a lot of their defensive players. So you go rich to poor quick, but also for the good side, for the Jaguars, you can go from poor to rich. You can turn it around 1 year. Last year, they exceeded expectations with that jump on offense. That just doesn't happen a lot. That shows you how bad they were in 2014.
No doubt.
But so what the key is for this defense is, okay, third down, sacks and interceptions. All that should play into each other, because you assume they'll be just as good against the run. So, you know, a lot of people will say that, okay, that a lot of the pieces are good. It's how fast can they come together, and will it be week one or will it be week 5? And if it's week 5, what will be the record? So I still think this is a team that's going to be carried by its offense early.
Mm-hmm.
But if they get held 17 points, that's not going to be an end-all.
No, it shouldn't be. There's going to be games where they can win in that kind of situation this year, you would think. I don't know how early those games are going to come in the 2016 season. And the other interesting thing, as you said, the way teams handle offense versus the way they handle defense, because they need to keep a hold of these pieces. Of those 11 teams, again, this is just since 2010 that have made that six-point jump. Of those 11 teams, two of them appear on the list twice. Houston and Minnesota account for 4 of those 11, and that gives you an idea of just the kind of roller coaster it can be, not only in the National Football League, but specifically on defense. And the other thing I paid attention to with that as well, and this kind of points to that same kind of argument, is how much turnover there was in the starting lineup. So how many guys are they replacing on average in these 11 teams? And the number was 5 among those 11 teams. And how many rookies are they playing in the starting lineup, getting the majority of starts for that football team? And there was a total of 11. Nobody had more than 2 rookies that they had in the starting lineup, you know, on a week-by-week basis among any of those 11 teams. But they all do feel like kind of indicators of exactly what Jacksonville has done, where it's not like when you look at the history of the league, and again, I didn't look at any of the bad history there. That's obviously teams that were very successful doing what the Jaguars have done this offseason. But there is a roadmap, essentially, for you replace half your defense and you put a couple rookies on the field, in this league you can succeed doing that on the defensive side of the ball. I don't think you can do the same thing on the offensive side, which is what we saw here in Jacksonville 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I think one of the major storylines, and really it won't get started, you won't get to answer it till week one, is where's the pass rushing depth? You basically are counting on two rookies to carry that load on third down with Fowler and Ngakoue. How much do they – I mean, they're talking like now, like, okay, Ryan Davis and Dan Scooter are going to have roles doing that. How legitimate is that? What are they going to do with Malik Jackson? Will he slide outside at all? I don't think so. So how is he going to be as an interior pass rusher? So, you know, it's – the good part for the Jags, I guess, is we're having to ask these questions. Mm-hmm. We're not asking the question of there's nobody here.
Sure.
You know, and we know what they're, you know, we know they're going to be a pretty boring scheme team, but that's the unknown. And one of the things I asked Todd Wash last month or this month was the balance of working on your stuff during the four preseason games and also having some surprises ready for Green Bay. And he said basically you meet in the middle, is you're going to have some stuff that you practice that you're saving for week one,
mm-hmm.
but also, as he said, is to get better at what they do, they got to be out there. They have to run it against other teams. So I think you'll see some pressures during the preseason, but some of the more elaborate stuff they'll hold on to.
Yeah, and they should. They should. And I'm curious to see what it looks like from that perspective. One of the other things of those 11 teams, 10 of them changed defensive coordinators.
Well, that's the big one.
Yeah. And five of them changed head coaches because it just wasn't working for whatever reason. And I didn't know what to do with Sean Payton, who could technically be the sixth. One of the big turns was New Orleans when he got back after the year-long suspension with Bounty Gate. But 10 of the 11 teams had changed defensive coordinators. And the only team that hadn't was Carolina, and that was the second year under Rivera, so they weren't changing anything yet. And it obviously turned out fine for them there in Carolina. But it does make an impact. You know, changing the guy who's calling those plays. Now, it's also notable the names that you're talking about with that, because it was Del Rio and Cronell and Wade Phillips and Jim Schwartz. It was these guys that had a huge level of success mm-hmm. doing that kind of thing in the National Football League before that were put into that role. And there wasn't a whole lot of, who is that guy? You know, being named defensive coordinator for that team. And I think in a lot of ways, Todd Wash does fit that kind of nondescript description.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'll see if it pays dividends for this this Jaguars team. I know last week, at the end of the week, frog in the throat, at the end of the week, Mark Lamping spoke a little bit, and I know he was being asked to talk about the rookie symposium and all that kind of thing that they were doing down there, but also commented briefly on what's happening with construction outside of what they're doing with the club seats and everything in the stadium. What was your reaction to what he had to say?
I'm pretty sure it's the first time he said that they're gunning for 30 or more dates at the amphitheater per year.
Mm-hmm.
That hadn't been revealed. So my guess is they are already talking to bookers and entertainment people and like the direction that's going. And then the last time I talked to Mark a couple weeks ago, he said this hasn't really gotten a lot of attention, but the south end zone where they're building the new entrance, that will be for people to come in and out of the field if they want to have like music festivals. They want to have like a stage on the field along with the amphitheater. You know, when I saw that project, it was like, okay, they're building a new entrance for the players.
So almost like a festival
yeah.
where they could have a band outside and yeah. inside.
So, yep. So they are, they sort of don't acknowledge why this was delayed. My guess is they want to make sure they had the club seat ready to go. And then they had a separate bid process for the amphitheater and the indoor practice facility. But he said that next April is when they will be given, you know, the keys to it.
Okay. And they said that the project has started. They just haven't had the official,
I said, what do you mean it started? He goes, yeah, we're starting in there. But, and that also means just that south end zone part. You don't see any bulldozers outside the stadium yet. And he says once everybody's, you know, schedule with ownership and the mayor, once they'll have an official shovel to dirt.
Okay. So that'll be the photo op, as I say, to say that we're actually getting this thing started, even if it is officially kind of underway unofficially right now for this Jaguars organization. And look, that's a it's a good step. We saw it. I don't know. The balance is going to be interesting to me between, again, there's an advantage to playing in the kind of heat that they get to play in early on in the season, and the balance of trying to figure out how many days you want to be out in this as compared to how many days you want to be inside. Now, the weather doesn't have to be a factor anymore as to whether or not you're going to be able to practice at times, but the balance between how much you want to put these guys out in the heat just to get them accustomed to it, I think will be interesting.
Well, I think what they'll do, and one thing Gus has talked to me about, is that Miami has a bubble. They practice outside, and then they'll do their afternoon walkthrough inside.
Okay.
So you put them outside in pads, and then by putting them inside during the walkthrough, your recovery time increases. And also during the off season, one or two of those days during OTAs or minicamp when it was closed to the public and it's that hot out and you have a very limited time to be around the players, that's when you'll put them inside. So it's going to be for rain and lightning, but also for player maintenance.
Yeah, and that makes sense. If they use it that way, that would make complete sense if that's the direction they do go. The fan feedback spotlight question of the day today, we're asking you. It's a defensive-minded show today, and so we're asking who will be the top three defensive players for the Jaguars at this time next year. So when we're getting ready for the 2017 season, who are the three guys that you will circle as the three best players on that side of the ball for this Jaguars team? We'll get to some of your answers next at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, at Ryan O'Halloran there on Twitter, as well as on the Facebook page at facebook.com/Jaguars Today. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. We roll along the fan feedback spotlight coming up next here on 1010XL.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, rolling along here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Fat Tony here with you, Ryan O'Halloran alongside from the TU and Jacksonville.com. I know you're going on vacation. We'll figure out what's going on before you hit vacation here in just a couple minutes, as I know you got a busy day. Just came from the stadium this morning. I think you're heading back down there as soon as you get done with me here.
Yeah, getting a couple things in the can. And, you know, whenever we do a photo shoot, I like to be there to do the introductions and if anybody has any questions. So that's why I was running a late behind, but
wait, Ryan,
it's good. This time of year is good to get some things done, because once camp starts, it's all about football.
Yeah.
Ryan was in the photo shoot.
Were you in the photo shoot? Tyler wants to know.
I should probably plug in my headphones. No, I wasn't.
No.
There doesn't mean to be any photos of me.
Let me let Tyler know. No, he was not in the photo shoot. I'll continue playing telephone between you two guys for the rest of this show. We got the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you today who will be the top three Jaguars defensive players at this time next year. We'll get your answer here in just a moment, Ryan. But some of the answers we got today on Facebook from Sean to Sean Gibson. Did he get the job done at free safety like everyone hoped? Miles Jack, did he stay healthy and pick up the system? And he has Paul Posluszny as his third, which I think is a long shot to actually be the third on this team, but could be in the conversation, I guess. Damon said Dante Fowler Jr., Jalen Ramsey, and Tashaun Gibson with Jack Jackson, Telvin Amukamara, and Marks a close honorable mention. There's the seven or eight guys. So much talent, it's hard to really choose. From Alex, I'll say it'll be one Dante Fowler Jr., two Miles Jack, three Tashaun Gibson. From Josh, Dante Fowler at one, Tashaun Gibson, then Telvin Smith. From Zachary, Jack Fowler Ramsey. From Lars, Smith Fowler Ramsey. From Tony, Telvin Gibson Puz, another vote there for Puz. From Young Loco, Fowler Jack Ramsey. And the same kind of names mentioned here, Cameron here had Miles Jack, Malik Jackson, and Tashaun Gibson. What are some of the answers we got on Twitter?
On Twitter, Johnny Spades underscore 11225. He says Malik Jackson, Tashaun Gibson, Dante Fowler. Joshua says Telvin Smith, Tashaun Gibson, Malik Jackson. Dino Funk says number one, Gibson. Number two, Fowler. Number three, Devon House. Number one and two, help House shine. Irish Jaguar says Tashaun Gibson, Jalen Ramsey, Dante Fowler. Johnny Machiavelli, a.k.a. Duval Doom, says Yannick Ngakoue, Dante Fowler, Tashaun Gibson, Jordan Spencer, Fowler, Gibson, and Jack. Mike Yazigi says Devon House, Dante Fowler, and Telvin Smith. Ocho Fisho, Gibson, Telvin, and Jack. Clarence Austin, Telvin, Jack, and Ramsey with Gibson, Jack, and House a close second. So it seems like we're getting a lot of repeat answers same five or six guys that seem to be in the responses here.
Those top five or six guys, interestingly enough, Paul Posluszny got mentioned a couple times. Duval Doom.
Maybe they did. They maybe think it was like this year.
I don't know. Duval Doom mentioned Yannick Ngakoue as a guy that he has as the top three next year, which would be stunning to me. Mm-hmm. If he actually would, just with the influx of talent they have on that side of the ball, to think at this time next year that he'd be one of the top three, I'd be really surprised if that was the case. I would love to see Dante and him both on that list as guys who are getting a ton of sacks this year. I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't know if there's going to be enough opportunities for both those guys to be considered top three guys.
Yeah, my three would probably be Fowler, Gibson, and I think Devon House.
Why House?
I think if you're Fowler and Ngakoue, Malik Jackson, Sendarek Marks, pass rush is good. Devon House is going to get more interceptions. I think he's going to be more comfortable out there. He's going to be more comfortable taking risk, knowing he has Tayshaun Gibson behind him. So I think going into next year, you're going to see that Devon House is going to be a foundation guy here.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. I'm curious, you know, just specifically with this question, you know, you mentioned a guy like House. The guy you didn't mention there is the guy they drafted at five to play corner. Yeah. And it's just, it's interesting to have House ahead of Ramsey 1 year in, even. But I think it's an interesting question because there's really six or seven guys that you can feel pretty good about putting on that kind of list. I think Tayshaun Gibson, because they've been looking so long to have a guy that can play that free safety spot, feels like almost a lock to me at this point in time. If he's any good, I think he's going to be one of those guys that gets talked about that way. He's already kind of the unsung hero of this offseason to this point, and we'll see what he gives them on the field. And then it gets a little more difficult. It's about what do you actually expect Dante Fowler to be in 2016. I think there's going to be opportunities because of what they have up the middle. I think the question would be answered differently by fans than it will be by guys inside that building.
I mean, inside the building, it'll be Ramsey, Jack Fowler, and any order.
And it could be Malik in there, too. And I think it's because it will allow Fowler to be what they think Fowler can be, is their ability to get any kind of pass rush up the middle and allow him to be that athlete on the edge, where I think there's going to be, you know, three or four times this year where Malik Jackson or Sendarek Marks or somebody in the middle of that defense just runs the quarterback into Dante Fowler Jr.
Well, that's like one thing is with a defensive tackle like Jackson, what's going to be an interesting thing to monitor is how many sacks does he set up by drawing a double team or winning his matchup and flushing the guy right into Fowler or Ngakoue. So, you know, he's like, you talk about hockey assist. I mean, how many of those is he going to get for a sack? So that's where his impact may not be measured 100% by numbers, but you'll have to dig a little bit deeper to see what he's doing right.
Absolutely. I mean, Sendarek Marks had 8.5 sacks a couple years ago, but he was a lot more impactful than that. You know, and 8.5 sacks is a really good number for a defensive tackle anywhere in the league, but he was so disruptive for this football team 2 years ago, and it's the idea of bringing in a guy like Malik Jackson, which you're hoping brings back kind of that disruption in the middle of that defense. You have Sendarek Marks coming back hopefully healthy. I'm really curious to see what Sheldon Day looks like in pads, because everybody had nothing but glowing remarks about that guy through this offseason.
Yeah, and I asked Gus about that. I think we may have talked about it 2 weeks ago. I asked Gus at that last minicamp. I said, you know, he's gaining a lot of praise. But I said, he's an interior defensive lineman. You know, how can you be impressed without pads? And he basically said, yeah, I see where you're coming from, but what they're looking at is the first step and also leverage. Is he getting under a guy's blocking attempt, you know, by just bending a little bit? But he's a guy, in Ngakoue, they said, well, he plays the run better than we thought he did. I don't really see how you can really tell that either.
We'll find out.
So, you know, once the pads go on the first week of August, guys will start separating themselves.
Yeah, I think quickness gets you so far in the NFL. And I'm not saying it's a bad trait to have. It's obviously good to be quick in the NFL, but if you're going to play in those interior positions, you have to be able to combine quickness with not only technique, but strength at some point in time if you're going to be on the football field. And I'm curious to see if Sheldon Day can do that. I'm not sure that I'm not saying I don't think he can. I'm saying that I talked about this with Martineau on Friday. He's at the top of the list of the guys that I was really like, okay, well, he's the fourth round pick. That's great for him. He's gone from that in my mind to I really want to see what this guy looks like in pads. You know, and he may be at the top of that list of guys that kind of went from off my radar to maybe the center of my radar by the time we get to training camp just because of the way everyone else has been talking about him to this point. And there's a handful of guys that kind of fall into that kind of range with all the defensive talk that we've had today. And again, I went over all those stats for what it would mean for the Jags if they can improve by 6 points. The big question that can't be answered, obviously, until they get on the field officially about this is whether or not they actually have the talent to do that. And I think looking from the outside, Ryan, and again, we don't have any information as far as what they're actually going to look like on the field. It's unclear at this point what Miles Jack's role is going to be. Is Jalen Ramsey going to play on the outside or inside? That's a little bit unclear at this point in time as well. How they're going to rotate that defensive line is a big question. It feels like outside of where they want to put Ramsey, the secondary is pretty solid at this point in time, but it's just where they want to put that floating piece with Jalen Ramsey. Do you think they have the pieces in place that when everything is said and done, they can improve by a number like that in that 6 to 7 point range?
I think they can because they gave up so many points last year. Is all it takes is, you know, one game where you give up 10 points instead of 30. A couple more games like that, that impacts your average. Clearly, they have better people on the field. I think Ramsey's going to be an outside guy, then move inside until Colvin comes back, so he'll play both, and then leave a Makamura outside on sub downs. The Miles Jack thing is going to be interesting because one of those guys is going to have to come up the field on third down. So the talent is there. It's can they come together quickly, and can they have a game where they just completely shut down a team? And because that impacts the averages.
Yeah, as I've said, I don't know that I want to play the Jags in the second half of 2016. I don't know what they're going to look like early on in the season because I think they don't know quite what to do with all that they have at this point. And training camp and the preseason games are going to be very interesting from that perspective, just with them playing around with combinations and what they want to do with these guys and get them acclimated.
And let's not underestimate the absence of Colvin. Granted, he has no interceptions, but he blitzed. He had a couple sacks last year. He was an impact player in that regard. And you know, it takes a special kind of guy to play inside where things happen a lot quicker, a lot more physical. So that's why I think they're just going to put Ramsey in there at the start because he's done it a little bit in college. But that's where if I'm a team, that's where I'm going to test the Jags right away.
No doubt. And it'll be interesting to see how they approach those first four games because I'm with you. I do think it's a big loss for this team defensively to be in a position where you may not be able to ease Ramsey into that role. So it may have been a thing where that's the idea anyway. Ramsey's going to be our guy in the slot when everything is said and done. But if you have Colvin available, then you can put him in there at times, and that doesn't have to be what he does all the time and overexpose him potentially in the early part of the season, especially when you look at the quarterbacks that are going to be playing early on with Aaron Rodgers and Phillip Rivers and Andrew Luck. I mean, it's really talented guys in this league that he's going to have to deal with, and they're smart enough to know, let's go with the rookie.
Yeah.
It's going to happen, and that doesn't mean that he's not going to make some plays, but there's going to be some times where he misses them too.
Yeah, and people are saying, well, you know, Andrew Luck's come off injury, the Colts have a bad defense. So what? They have weapons on offense. Or, you know, Luck has never had a great line.
Yeah, Ramsey doesn't play offense.
Yeah, so the Colts are going to score points.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would be stunned if that's not a high-scoring game in London.
I'm totally with you there. Okay, so what do we have coming up? I know vacation tomorrow, but what do we have coming up on Jacksonville.com?
Well, every day we're counting down our power rankings, which people are clicking on it, so I appreciate that. So we'll have one team every day through the end of July.
People love a list.
What we've found is they like lists and they like pro football.
Oh, yeah.
It works. That works. We'll have maybe a Josh Wells feature later in the week.
Okay.
And then Sunday we'll have our NFL and Jaguars notes package. So that'll be this week.
All right.
And maybe I'm guessing a training camp schedule comes out in the next day or two, next 3-4 days. So be on the lookout for that in terms of which practices are open to fans.
Okay. Sounds good. As you'll be on vacation starting tomorrow, enjoy the time up there in the north. Get away from this heat. I'm not sure how hot it is up there, but it's not this hot.
77 today.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. I was watching soccer this weekend, and there were parts of France where it was like 55. Oh. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, just walking out into the furnace that we have here in Northeast Florida right now has been miserable for the last couple of days. But enjoy the vacation. We'll see you and catch up with you as soon as you get back.
All right, thank you.
All right, and thanks for coming in. I know it's a hectic day for you, but thanks for spending a few minutes with me here. So that'll do it for us here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Jaguars Today Monday. So for Ryan O'Halloran, for Tyler Devitt, for the absent Mike Dempsey, for everyone else you heard from today, including T-Wig, James Coleman, Rashad Green, Telvin Smith, your number 5 overall draft pick, Jalen Ramsey, also on the program today. I'm Fat Tony, back with you tomorrow. Pete Prisco in studio with me for the 2 hours tomorrow, talking Jaguars football here on Jaguars Today. The boys of Midday Chalk coming up next here on 1010XL.
You guys have a good day. Peace.